Good morning. This hearing will come to order. Madam Secretary, it's wonderful to welcome you here today. I know you're freshly back from a quick trip, and we appreciate enormously all of your efforts on our behalf. I can't think of a more relevant moment in many ways for you to appear before the committee, so we're happy to have you here. Let me just say up front that we have joined with our allies, and we've heard loudly and clearly from you, Madam Secretary, that Colonel Gaddafi must go. He has lost all legitimacy, and I think it's important to be clear that we can't be halfway about that goal. The people of Libya are not asking for foreign troops on the ground. They are committed to doing what is necessary. But they do need the tools to prevent the slaughter of innocents on Libyan streets. And I believe that the global community cannot be on the sidelines while airplanes are allowed to bomb and strafe. A no-fly zone is not a long-term proposition, assuming the outcome is what all desire, and I believe we ought to be ready to implement it as necessary. It is clear that we are living through one of the most important transformations in the history of the modern world. Some have likened the wave of protests sweeping the Middle East to the revolutions of 1848, which changed Europe's political landscape forever. And there is no doubt that the events of this year will be studied for decades to come. But in this moment, at this time, as we gather here and as the events unfold in the region, the full ramifications of the upheaval that has happened from Tunis to Tahrir Square, from the streets of Manama and Sana'a and Tripoli and beyond, we don't understand yet exactly how that outcome is going to be defined. What we do know is that this is a time of great challenge, particularly for the people there, but also for people in other countries with interests and with families and connections there. Events this powerful demand a powerful response. Our commitment now to the ordinary people who are risking their lives to win human rights and democracy will be remembered for generations in the Arab world. We have to get this moment right. We are working here in the Senate with colleagues on both sides of the aisle to create a package of longer-term financial assistance, as contrary as some might think that is in the context of our budget today, which we will discuss, it is, in fact, an imperative, because it is key to helping to turn the new Arab awakening into a lasting rebirth. In the event that our involvement is not about sending troops or tanks to remake the region in our image, it's about sending economists and election experts and humanitarian aid to help a region remake itself. We have not yet worked out any numbers or details, and obviously we'll work with the administration, but I am convinced that a significant financial commitment by the United States to assist in this monumental and uplifting transformation is key to its long-term outcome and to our relationship to it. We're being called upon to forge new relationships in a part of the world that has been and will remain vital to our national security. And we've been given the opportunity to demonstrate conclusively to the young men and women of the Muslim world and beyond that Al-Qaeda's belief that change requires violence and radicalization is just plain wrong. In fact, that is one thing that really stands out in the events of the last 6 weeks or so. The Arab awakening is an unambiguous repudiation of Al-Qaeda's poisonous doctrine. We now have one of history's greatest opportunities to affirm the universal appeal of democratic values to people across cultures and across religions, and to encourage an entire region to move towards reform and away from violence. Now, as I mentioned, and the Secretary knows this better than anyone, we all understand we face a budget crisis in our own country. But we can either pay now to help brave people build a better democratic future for themselves, or we will certainly pay later in much higher terms with increased threats to our own national security. The budget that we're here to discuss this morning lays the foundation for our ability to fulfill our responsibilities to the American people and our responsibilities on a universal basis to people that keeps faith with our values. The $53 billion in core funding that the President has requested for international affairs is, in fact, a very small investment for the kind of return that we get. Consider this. We're going to spend certainly $700 billion-plus this year on our military. By contrast, the international affairs budget is less than one-tenth of what the Pentagon spends. And as Secretary Gates himself pointed out, if you took the entire Foreign Service roster, you could barely staff one aircraft carrier. And yet our diplomats are serving on the front lines of multiple revolutions and wars. They're making vital contributions in Afghanistan and in Iraq. They're planning the transition from a military mission to a diplomatic one so that we can cement the political progress that has cost hundreds of billions of dollars and thousands of American lives. In Africa, they are helping to midwife the birth of a new nation in South Sudan, to resolve the situation in Darfur, to forge a new relationship with the government in Khartoum. They're leading the fight against global challenges like nuclear proliferation and climate change. And in countless communities around the world, they are providing essential humanitarian assistance, preventing the spread of cholera in Haiti, preventing distributing food to refugees from the conflict in northern Kenya, and preventing providing shelter to flood victims in Pakistan. This is simply not the time for America to pull back from the world. It's time to step forward. Yet just last week, the House sent us a continuing resolution for fiscal year 2011 that imposes draconian cuts. The budget would slash our humanitarian aid by 50%, decimating our ability to provide food, shelter, and medicine after natural disasters, and putting hundreds of thousands of lives at risk. It would cut nearly two-thirds of the funds devoted to promoting clean energy and increasing resilience to climate change in the most vulnerable regions of the world. It would cut over $1 billion in global health funding, which means that over 400,000 people who would have received life-saving treatment through PEPFAR will now linger on waiting lists as their HIV diagnosis becomes a death sentence. And it would slash food and education for the world's poorest children by 50%. There's something about these cuts that I think does violence to the Judeo-Christian ethic by which so many people claim to be guided in their private and their public lives. These cuts are not abstractions. These are people, and they also are the values of our country. Cutting these programs will do almost nothing to rein in our budget deficit, but it will cost thousands of lives and certainly cost us our reputation and our commitment in the world. And by reducing our diplomatic capacity around the globe, believe me, we will increase the threats to our own country. I know Secretary Clinton feels just as strongly, powerfully about these issues and about the necessity of maintaining our global commitment. She's been an ardent advocate and tireless practitioner of American diplomacy. And so we're very pleased to have her here today to discuss this budget with the committee. Senator Lugar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.